All right, welcome to the second edition of the Home Studio Craft Podcast. I'm Scott.
I'm Tippins.
Going on, Tippins?
Not much.
How was your week?
It was good. Downloaded those Slate Digital plugins and trying those out and stuff a little bit. So
that's great. What have you? Which ones have you worked with so far? Or do you even know?
I don't even know.
It's overwhelming.
The channel strips and the one that has all of them in it is the, what's it called? The channel strip or whatever?
Virtual mix rack.
Yeah, that's it. And then, the SSL ones, I'm like lost in, basically. Yeah. But
it takes time to get through them all for sure. There's a lot there.
Yeah, my idea is I'm going to go through some of my old vocals and just start on the vocals of a song and just see if I can A B the new stuff versus what I did before and see how it sounds.
Right. Yeah. You may want to just take a couple of their templates that they have in there. Just try some of those and see what you get.
Okay, then we're rocking and rolling, They're sounding pretty good so far. I didn't have a lot of time, but
I think their stuff sounds really, really great. There's a ton of really great plugins out there that just a lot of people. I record everything in the box, everything with software on the computer. I do have one external preamp that I use. But basically, everything else is in the box, and the models that they make of all the preamps and the compressors and the delays and everything else is just it's incredible, man.
Yeah,
just what they can do with software.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you were telling me you were searching some things on interfaces.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be cool to talk about some of the most Google terms when it comes to home music production, and some more beginner style of Googles. And one that came up a lot was best audio interface. So it's a super vague search term, obviously, but.
Yeah. And what is the best, right?
Yeah.
What constitutes the best?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things for you'd want to give consideration for. When you're purchasing interface, especially if you're a beginner just buying your first interface.
Yeah.
And I think that obviously price point is one. Focusrite Scarlett's probably the 2i2, probably the most popular one, I would say. And it's good. I mean, whatever it is, $175, something like that.
What are some general things to look for as far as specs or whatever when it comes to
I think if you're just starting off, the preamp quality, most of the preamp qualities are pretty good across the board for the most part. I mean, obviously you spend more money, you're generally going to get a better quality preamp. But on the entry level stuff, I'd say one of the main considerations is the number of inputs, right? Okay. So take yourself, for example, if you and Nunez are playing, it's you two guys. So you obviously need two inputs, right?
Yeah.
To record at the same time.
Yeah.
But if you're a person in your band, that's in charge of doing the recording or that's your hobby or whatever, you love doing it, and you have a full drum kit, you've got, bass, synths, if you got any horns or whatever. So, take that into account.
Sure. Yeah.
So, the two inputs isn't going to cut it unless you just put a couple of live mics out in the room and record it that way, which works for reference purposes. But if you're doing any type of serious recording that you want to use as a demo or something, you're going to need to have a lot more inputs in that. So that would be one consideration. The number of outputs too. Maybe do you want to hook up a couple of different sets of speakers, maybe one mono speaker and a couple of near field monitors, something like that. It just depends. Most beginners, people are new to recording are probably just going to have one set of monitors for the most part.
Yeah.
And then, so you were searching for some, you know, some other things too. And what was something else that that came up?
A lot of microphone questions. So, like, best beginner microphone,
right?
Or best microphone for recording, insert instrument, guitar, drums,
right?
So yeah, just a few, you know, the best bang for your buck mics. Or
I mean, there's so many options out there. I mean, I always come back to, you know, the first mic is that I recommend you get is an SM57, just because it's, you know, it'll last you for the rest of your life. It's super durable. You can record drums with it. You record guitars with it. You know, I wouldn't recommend it for vocals, but I'm sure people record vocals with it. You know, I definitely would say get like a budget condenser mic, something like that. Maybe like a Rode NT1A or...
You know, vocals.
Yeah, vocals to start off with. We'll just say do your research, you know, see what comes up. I mean, there's so much information online. It's hard to weed through all the different options. But, you know, I would say, you know, define what your budget is first, because that's going to already kind of create like or restrict your search. It's going to be the filter on your search.
Yeah.
And that's going to limit your options. And then from there, look at the best, most well-reviewed option within your price point. I'd say that's probably some good advice.
So okay.
Ideally get two mics, you know, like SM57 or some good condenser microphone, and then or a good dynamic microphone, excuse me, and then get you know, a decent condenser microphone for your vocals.
Yeah, okay.
So something like that.
So as far as like monitors, a lot of questions about speakers and stuff. Like, how important are monitors? We'll get into, we have some research on what people listen to music the
most
on.
Like how they consume it.
But with that, and we'll get to that, but as far as monitors, how important is that, at least at the start, for people?
So that's a great question. You know, so for home studios, a lot of it is going to depend on, you know, is your room acoustically treated? And even if it's acoustically treated, you know, have you calibrated your speakers, basically, you know, when they're like to take into account like the bass response in the room and the different reflection points, speaker boundary interference, all that stuff. So yeah, monitors are definitely important, but you also have to take into consideration the acoustics of your room. So that being said, you know, there's other options out there too. Like, you know, Slate has the, I think it's called VSX, where you actually, these are, hold on. Yeah. VSX. So, where they basically have like virtual studios in software. So when you're doing your mixing, you can pick like these different studio models, and it's as if you are mixing in those particular studios.
Mm.
And it's kind of weird at first. It sounds really, really weird at first, but once you kind of get used to it, I found it really helpful to be able to mix, and particularly like in the low end, right? So if I'm mixing on my monitors in my studio, and I've treated the studios, I think, as well as I can possibly treat it for the type of room that it is. It's kind of a weird room. It's almost square, then it's a little bit rectangular over here. But when I listen to my monitors, I definitely get a way more bass response. And if I'm listening to like the VSX platform, you know, I do a mix through that and I play it back, and I can play it back in, you know, my stereo in the house, on my Sonos in my car, or like on my AirPods. And it sounds good basically across the board. So it's really accurate. So something like that may be an option if you are starting out and you don't have a room that's like acoustically treated. So I think like for $300, which is definitely cheaper than most of your sets of monitors, right?
Yeah.
Or at least around the same price point, especially if you're mixing like in an apartment, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you've got neighbors and you can't really, I mean, not that you should mix loud, but sometimes it may be an issue, right? Depending where you are.
Yeah, to get.
I think it's a good option. But
okay. That's pretty cool. I've never heard about that.
Oh, it's cool. Yeah, I'll show it to you. It's a really cool system. There's a couple of different companies that do it as well, but Slate's the one that I'm familiar with, and I think they make a really good quality product.
Cool.
So speaking of that, I just did some research this past week on like how people are consuming music, right? So, and then I'm just thinking about like how I listen to music. Like I always used to like sit down in front of my stereo and listen to records, right?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. You know, back in the day. And now it's like I never, you know, I'm trying to remember the last time like I actually sat down in my living room and like listened to stuff like on my stereo. Now it's pretty much AirPods, yeah. Right? Or listening to it on like my Sonos system. So I'm going to get a piece of paper here. So this is the results of the search I did. And the sources are from like Tech Radar, PC Mag, and Digital Trends magazine.
Yeah.
So the number one thing that people listen to music on is smartphones. Like just smartphones, not AirPods, not headphones, like just
like straight out of
you know, yeah, speaker, having your phone, listening to it on your phone, right? So, and then after that, it's smart speakers. So, like you know, Amazon, you know, Google Home, Apple HomePod, yeah, you know, Sonos, things like that. And yeah, I could definitely relate to that. So, and then number three, it's like laptops and desktops. So people like doing their work. And, yeah, you know, streaming Spotify and their laptop or whatever. And then earbuds and headphones. And then after that, tablets. And number six is like traditional hi-fi systems.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's so different than what it used to be. And then I guess even portable media players, devices like the Sony Walkman and other high-res port, right?
Yeah.
Right. I can't even remember the last time I saw a Sony Walkman. Anyway. So I thought that was really revealing, right?
Sure.
So when you're mixing, you want to make sure that it sounds good on your smartphone.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
Because if it doesn't, you're kind of screwed.
For some reason, it makes me sad a little bit. I don't know why.
I know, it does kind of like cheapen... It kind of cheapens it in a way, I think, right?
Yeah.
It's almost... Yeah, it's... especially something you spend so much time doing, like the whole recording process, right? From just even like getting the idea of a song.
Yeah.
You know, like bringing other people in to collaborate on the song with, and then actually going through the process.
Yeah.
Although we love to do it, right? So it's not like work, but it is time.
And then it's consumed, you know, like
on
you
a
said,
a situation. Like smartphone, right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Crazy. So, I'm guilty of it myself.
Me too, man. I mean, yeah, exactly. It's like no judgment against, it's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Right. It's just the way it is. And it's kind of cool too, though, because I mean, if you think about it, I'll think back to the 80s, right? So if we wanted to listen to music in like the late 70s or whatever, you know, we'd have to wait till you get home. Right, get in front of your stereo and put on an album and listen to it. But in the 80s, when Sony came out with the Walkman, right, and you listened to it on tape, and you got your headphones, it was great. I remember just riding my bike around Boston and just like listening to my Walkman.
Yeah,
you know, I don't remember what I was listening to then, but probably the Police or U2 or something. But it was just. It was awesome. And so that being said, it's fantastic that now you've got music wherever you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I would be interested in seeing like how much percentage of, this is a little side topic, but like how much percentage of revenue is from TikTok on streaming stuff now? Because, you know, most TikTok like sounds are songs, so they're playing I'm not sure exactly how it's split like with the record labels and stuff, but
right.
There's been a big, you know, certain record labels are in better standing with TikTok than other labels are, so I would, it'd be interesting to see like what percentage of streams compared to like even Spotify now are coming just from people listening on TikTok.
But like, is TikTok, since I'm not that familiar with the platform, just beyond watching some really funny videos, but like, is it actually a platform to stream music though, or people are just posting music on it?
Yeah, so people, it's a little bit of both. So like, it'll blow up a song because it was a TikTok sound. So it'll be maybe, you know, 20 seconds of a song.
Right.
And then when people are going to the concerts, that's, you know, all they know of the song. But it's pretty cool that it gives artists a chance. It's like another platform for musicians to blow up. And then you'll have these people that are getting big just from their TikTok, like posting a video with them in acoustic. But
But you're not going on there like to, you know, search for music and stream it.
No, it's almost like, it almost blows up the song subtly because people are doing dances to it or, but yeah, again, it's all being listened to in mono. So it's just interesting. That's like the number one thing, even more than radio, getting artists famous, but it's like.
Right. Just, they're just self-producing themselves and using it as the platform for promotion. Yeah.
Or even from the labels, you know, their TikTok's a huge part of the strategy.
Trying to
get a song that might have a dance tied to it or something like that.
Right.
But yeah, again, all listened to on the phone. It's crazy.
You know, that reminds me of like last week when we were talking, I mentioned an artist who recorded his first EP using his smartphone and GarageBand. That's Steve Lacy. That's the name of the guy.
He's cool. Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's before he was signed, that's what he did. Wow. Yeah, his first EP.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, there's no barrier to entry, right? Like, money should not be an issue for you recording.
Yeah. You have, there's artists like, do you know who like Claro is?
Yeah.
She, you know, her songs are so just super underproduced and everything.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But Steve Lacy, he just got a cool Fender, or I guess that was like 2 years ago.
Oh, with like a signature Strat?
Yeah. It has a built-in fuzz circuit. It's pretty cool.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Sounds like one of Jack White's guitars.
Yeah, for real.
Like, he pulls out like a microphone.
Yeah.
Chord from
the he uses like a lot of like $50, $100 like Costco guitars and stuff. He's crazy.
Yeah.
I saw him in a few movies singing recently. He's
in movies,
yeah,
like doing cameos.
Yeah, Cold Mountain, have you ever seen
that? Yeah that's going back a few years.
Yeah,
but he was wasn't he like a mandolin player?
Yeah,
like,
they're in that band.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Yeah, he's in
that's a great movie too.
Have you seen Walk Hard with John C. Reilly? It's like a spoof on Walk the Line.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it, but I love him, man.
Jack White plays Elvis in that.
Does he really?
A small cameo, but it's really good.
Yeah. It's really good. That's awesome.
So what are some of your, you know, like some top albums that come to mind as far as your favorite mixes and production?
What are some of your favorite albums that come to mind for favorite mixes and production? I know what mine are, but you go first.
Siamese Dream, Smashing Pumpkins. I think it was Butch Vig did that.
Yeah. He gets the best guitar sounds.
That's a big part of it. The guitar sounds sound like they're like airplanes taking off in that album. Cool intros. Amazing, just amazing sound, and the way he mixes Billy Corgan's voice, his voice can sound very shrill I'm sure in the studio sometimes,
right,
without the right mix on it. So
it
sounds like almost another instrument in the mix.
But
I was listening to that album today. I was just wondering what some of your top ones are.
I mean,
personal
favorites, like producer wise. Actually, I've just been listening to this album. It's an album that came out in 2014. Khan Wakan, we were talking about it the other night. And guy that I is new to me, Daryl Thorpe, engineered and co-produced it with the band. I think it's the three members of the band. Man, that guy Daryl Thorpe is unbelievable. Just a great producer, great engineer. Like, the sounds on that record are just so good. I really like that a lot. Probably one of my all-time favorite producers is Trevor Horn. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but guy's incredible. And the most perfect album of all time, I think, is Steely Dan Asia. That's just a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much all the way around.
Yeah, and it's not a lot of songs, right? It's like 8 songs?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of them are like long, longer. Like Asia itself's probably, I don't know, almost 10 minutes maybe, something like that.
Yeah, I love that Black Cow song on there.
Yeah, Black Cow's good. I like that. I like the whole record. It's all good. I'm going to fix my mic here. It's kind of cutting out on me. Who's the engineer in this room? Check. Okay. Check 1, 2.
There's a few bands like Oasis's first big album, and Guns N' Roses is kind of like this too, where they would sound great live, and then they would get in the studio apparently, and it was
they
rough.
Couldn't capture
they
it.
Yeah, they couldn't capture that.
That was the same with Kiss.
Yeah,
Kiss too. Like they were known for their live show, and they would get them in the studio, and it just wouldn't translate until they came out with that album, Kiss Alive. Whenever, maybe that was probably like 70. I don't know, 6 maybe, something like that, around there. Yeah, and that was a huge, huge double album for them. I had it.
I like Kiss. Yeah. I like Kiss. I don't love
I liked it until they came out with Beth. But, yeah. And I mean, a lot of people love that song. Do you? I was like, they sold out, man.
Oh, Gene, they're definitely sold out.
Oh, they had like Kiss dolls and everything like that. So, like, I was a little metalhead. I just loved like heavy metal. And when they started doing all that shit, I was like, oh man, they suck.
I was at the Hard Rock.
I felt betrayed.
I was at the Hard Rock a month ago. And they had, they have like an art gallery there where they'll have paintings of rock stars and stuff like that. And they had a gallery of Paul Stanley paintings that he painted himself of himself.
And I just of course
it,
he
they
did.
They were like all like 10 grand each. It was like
he painted them of himself.
Yeah.
That's great.
They're hilarious.
A little bit of narcissism there.
Yeah. Paul. Not in Kiss. No.
No. No, not at all.
Not Gene Simmons.
Well, it's funny. I remember that they were rehearsing at an Air Force base that was close to where I lived in upstate New York at the time. So we were probably 90 miles out of the city. And they were rehearsing at an air hangar at Stewart Air Force Base. And one of my friend's dad, he worked down there. And, he saw them without their makeup on. Obviously, they were doing their rehearsal. And he was like, there's a reason for that makeup. That was the time for anybody saw them without their makeup. And it's like they aren't really that ugly.
Yeah, so. they were part of that backing track. They got killed for using backing tracks live the past couple
of
years.
Did they really?
Yeah,
like
they're like
recently?
Motley Crue style. Yeah.
No shit. I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, there's some bad videos out there.
That sucks, man.
Yeah. I mean, they should just have hung
who's it? Who is it? Is it Vince Neil? That's
yeah.
Have you heard like some of the vocal stuff? Like,
yeah, it's rough.
It's just rough, man.
I saw Guns N' Roses. Axl actually sounded surprisingly good in person.
Yeah.
Some of these videos I see of him are terrible, but they're at least singing it. Like,
right,
Vince
exactly.
They were using backing tracks for a while. Now they got John 5 and,
I heard some of my friend was playing me some of the tracks off the new album, and the production, it's amazing. It's not my cup of tea musically, but I'm telling you, man, I don't know what they did for his vocals in the studio, because just hearing him live is like, it was just rough.
No,
it was just brutal.
It's awful.
Yeah, it was.
I love
really
that
awful.
New guitar player they got, John 5. He's cool. He seems like a good guy.
Yeah,
I loved Mick Mars too, though.
Yeah,
the crew.
The crew. So, you know, one thing we were talking about the other day was we're talking about the loudness war, right? Mm. And like how things are like so compressed these days in music, right? Sure. Like just trying to make your song stand out.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was, because I saw like Rick Rubin was getting killed on YouTube for the loudness war, and
right.
like, specifically the album Californication, which is a great album, obviously.
The Peppers.
Yeah, something yeah. about, you know, everything being super loud.
Yeah.
And so
it's just like really, really compressed and limited. And so it's just like taking the dynamic level where you would normally, if you looked at something that wasn't overly compressed, you'd have like the waveform, you know, you'd have some variation, right? Mm-hmm. Or at least more variation. And then if you're compressing it, you're making the softer signals louder and the louder signals softer. So you're just squashing it down.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have that dynamic range. And, you know, I don't really think it matters anymore. It's not really worth it to overly compress things anymore because of the fact that, you know, with streaming, each platform has like a desired lufs, basically loudness. So it's like loudness units, full scale. And so each platform has a different like lufs rating. So like Apple Music might be like negative 16 LUFS. And I think Spotify might be like negative 14 LUFS. So when you submit your songs to those, you know, to like, you know, distributor like TuneCore, for example, and they're going to send it out to the different platforms like Apple Music or Spotify. Apple Music or Spotify is going to adjust your mix so that kind of matches what their requirement is. So I'm not so sure that it really matters that much anymore, right? Like yeah. it's going to, you know, because they want everything to kind of, it's like, you know, if you were, you know, when you used to watch television, like regular over-the-air TV, you'd watch TV, and you may not be familiar with this or not, but maybe you are. And like the TV show would be kind of like at one volume. And then when the commercials came on, yeah. it would be really loud.
Yeah.
And then the FCC passed a law basically that they kind of had to have everything the same. Well, it's kind of a good analogy to like the streaming services where they have, you have to kind of, you know, meet their requirement for that.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, there are like, I guess, variations within that, but they're just not as noticeable as what it would used to be. Because your ear is naturally going to think that just because something's louder, it sounds better.
Yeah, sure.
And
so
I think
all this streaming stuff, like you're, I'm assuming, against just compressing the shit out of everything until it's way louder or... How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, there was
less
of it, but I think like Rick Rubin was the guy who kind of like really, you know, made it popular, right?
Yeah.
So, like with like the first Beastie Boys album.
Yeah. Okay.
So something like that. So, I mean, it you know, I think there's a place for it. Okay. You know, it's not, I don't have anything against it. You know, but I do think it does take a little bit away from, you know, it depends on the kind of music you're listening to, too, right? Like, you're not going to do it, you know, on a folk track or, you know, an acoustic
sure.
guitar track.
Yeah.
Or okay. jazz. You know, that's not going to yeah. happen, right? But, you know, so something like metal. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I think it sounds good.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff he produced, too, it probably, you know, makes
yeah.
sense for.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, big drum sounds and you know,
yeah.
all that, you know, guitars.
Okay. Yeah, I've never, I had heard about it a lot and I'd never heard it, you know,
yeah.
fully explained.
Just, cool. Just Google like loudness wars and then it'll, you
yeah.
know, basically goes into it.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So, but, so what's going on in the upcoming week? Any plans?
Working and no,
yeah.
nothing crazy.
Working's
nothing
always
crazy.
There.
Working
yeah.
and gonna try and record some music.
Good man.
Yeah, I've been been slacking the past few weeks, you know, with
slacking or just working a lot?
Just working a lot, but slacking on my music at least. Yeah. You know, like trying to.
Well, it's hard, man. You know, it's like you finish your day job and, you know, getting the energy to go in and record and practice.
Yeah. Right? Especially doing like, you know, a lot of our songs need like vocals and stuff. So, and I.
You guys are looking for a singer, right?
We are, but like.
That's a hard
one. It's finicky, you know, like dealing with these people in like Facebook groups and stuff. Like, I don't know a bunch of people down here, you know, so, but yeah, we're trying to sing it ourselves right now.
Do it, man.
I literally have the course like side by side, with me as I'm doing it. So,
awesome.
Home Studio Craft, $90 off.
Don't forget it.
Yeah, that's it.
That's good.
How about you? You're going out of town?
Yeah, man. Soon. Going up to Maine for a week, Bar Harbor. So going back to Boston. I haven't been to Boston in a couple of years. So used to live there. Love Boston. Love New England.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So it's going to be, well, we're down in Florida. So it's like 90 degrees outside now. And I'll be in Boston tomorrow. It'll be 62. I'm loving it.
How long are you there for?
A week.
Nice.
That'll be good.
Some lobsters.
Lobster.
Yeah. You see the Tom Brady roast?
You know, I heard it was really funny.
You should check it out.
Yeah, it's good. They're pretty vicious.
Yeah, it's brutal, but it's awesome. You gotta check it out. Yeah.
Some of those roasts like make me like really, it's kind of like watching The Office with like, you know, Michael as your boss. He's just so cringy.
Yeah.
Right.
The Office is like my favorite show.
Right.
Yeah, I love it.
It's the best.
Yeah. Me and my girlfriend have literally watched it through, I think, seven times. Because it's a comfort show. You just leave it on and that's it.
For sure. That's like, that's your generation, man. My daughter's like the same way. I think she's watched like every episode of The Office like 3 times, every episode of Friends, like, you know, probably 4 or 5 times. It's just,
it's like comfort
shows. It's comforting,
they make
exactly.
You feel good. Right. They're not like, you know. It's not like you have the wire on all day.
Right.
Know? So it's like,
and
it's a little more uplifting.
Yeah, like you can leave it on in the background and it's light. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I did.
Yeah, it's like macaroni and cheese, but, you know, on TV.
Yeah.
Or on your
laptop.
I
love The Office. They toe the line a little bit. It's really unique as far as like, I love that dry sense of humor.
Who's your favorite character?
I love Creed. Creed is good. Meredith.
It's great.
Yeah. Meredith is hilarious. Almost every character is great, you know.
I loved, I always thought, like, Dwight was such a dick.
Yeah.
But then when he went to Staples.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I felt so bad. I was like, oh my God, they got to get Dwight back.
Yeah, he's like, give me something easy to sell. He's just, like, killing it. Yeah, Dwight doing customer service.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
All right, man. You all good, Tippins?
All good.
All right, brother. Catch you next week.
See ya.
See ya.